podcast is brought to you by the good people over at Gamefly. With over 9,000 titles for the PS4, PS3, Xbox One, Xbox 360, Nintendo Switch, Wii, and other consoles, there's no better time for gamers to make the most of their systems by using Gamefly to play all the new and classic games for as little as 32 cents a day. To start your 30-day free trial, head on over to cinemageekly.com/gamefly or click the support us link in the show notes for this episode.
Listening to a podcast from the Cinema Geekly Podcast Network. We're the geeks you deserve and the ones you need right now.
Let me make this one a little more personal, a little more tangible for you to feel, Mr. Christopher Daniels.
Oh, you thought you were safe, didn't you?
The thing about it is now the word is out, Chris. You are very unsafe. All your jokes, all your games. Did you really think you were going to go unpunished? Mr. Daniels, I assure you, you are not the first out-of-touch old man to not believe in me. But I will make damn sure you are the last. Now let me take this time to formally introduce myself to you, Chris. My name is Brody Lee, and I am the Exalted One.
It's a brand new episode of the Elite Cinema Geekly's AEW podcast. It's Anthony Lewis, Nick Montez, and we are back to talk more AEW Dynamite on TNT. The isolation era has begun. It's super weird. Our sister podcast, the NXT podcast, we have to figure out what we're going to do because there basically was no NXT. I don't know if you know about this, but yeah, Vince watched the Friday Night SmackDown that they did from the PC and determined he hated pro wrestling without fans and wanted there to be as little of it as possible. So on the 3-hour Monday Night Raw, there was only one match from the Performance Center, and they basically took up the rest of the time by doing promos, video packages, and showing the entire Royal Rumble from this year.
Wow.
Like, literally the entire Royal Rumble. So if, like, they went to a commercial break and came back, it was, like, right where they left off in the Royal Rumble. Like, they did not... it was one of those things. And NXT had zero matches. It was just... apparently, they did a nearly 60-minute documentary, essentially, on the Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa storyline, which I heard was actually very good. But I already know the whole story, and there's no point in watching it to cover it. So we don't know what we're going to do. We might watch old takeovers, because Jacqueline has only been watching since the WrestleMania from right about the WrestleMania from Louisiana. So right about when Ricochet debuted.
Oh, wow, yeah.
In NXT.
You have a lot of material to go back through.
That's about as long as she's been watching. So we might go back and watch some of the old takeovers or, you know, even, God forbid, watch NXT UK, which is not that good. But we could watch
You guys should watch NXT Arrival. That'd be cool, just to go all the way back to the start of the pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought about it for sure. And Or I'm also trying to figure out maybe we'll watch something that I know she'll actually like from top to bottom. That Arrival is a good show, but the best match is the first match, and then it's none of the matches afterwards can live up to the opener. So, yeah. All right. Well, enough about WWE and NXT. Let's talk about AEW. And first, let's talk about AEW Dark, the last AEW piece of product with fans in attendance. And boy, when this thing aired on Tuesday, Nick, I couldn't wait to watch it. Pro wrestling with fans. I was just getting it while I could get it. And you know what? It was not. It was a fun episode.
Really?
Yeah, they had a match with Colt Cabana defeating Peter Avalon, which was a lot of fun. It wasn't quite 3 stars, but I gave it 2.75.
Okay.
There was another fun match with the Hybrid 2 against Brandon Cutler and Michael Nakazawa, which I gave 2.5. But it was fun. They keep doing this thing with Brandon Cutler where every match he gets closer and closer to getting a win. He hasn't gotten one yet, but he's like getting better every week. His losing is like driving him towards victory. Like every
time, like a Mikey Whipwreck.
Yeah, yeah. Penelope Ford versus Riho match, which I gave 2.75, which saw an upset where Penelope Ford pinned Riho.
Wow.
So a big upset, which played into this week's episode of Dynamite. And the main event was a very good 3-star match, in my opinion, with Christopher Daniels defeating Stu Grayson of the Dark Order.
I bet that's fantastic. I'd like to see that one.
Yeah, so, and especially if you're jonesing for, like, wrestling with an audience, like, whew. I remember the Salt Lake City, whatever it was, the Salt Lake City crowd. I remember when we reviewed that episode of Dynamite last week, I didn't think the crowd was particularly into everything. But I tell you what, man, after a week of watching shows with no audience in them, this crowd sounded molten hot.
Bad.
Like, oh my God, they sound so into everything. All right, so let's talk about AEW Dynamite episode 24. Originally scheduled to take place in Rochester, New York, but now taking place in a very empty Daily's Place in Florida. And I gotta say, the setup was actually way cooler looking than the normal Daily's Place setup.
This time they had the two tunnels set up and the big Tron. It looked really cool.
Yeah, they used the that big video screen has been there in the previous times that they've been there, but they've used that stage area for extra seating for the fans to get more people in there. So with no fans, they just turned that whole stage area into the entranceway. Which looked very good.
Oh, yeah.
I thought. And we open on a completely darkened everything. It's just Cody in the ring with a spotlight on him. And talks about how they're trying to bring everybody together, even though we need to keep a distance from one another. It's kind of very short, you know, about what's going on in the world, and then sort of jumps into making a plea for Hangman Page and Matt Jackson to be able to put aside their differences to team together tonight with him. Says that he needs the real Kenny Omega he needs the Elite to be the Elite going into this Blood and Guts match. Kenny and Matt both walk out. Kenny says that nothing is certain right now, including with AEW. And it says that if everything goes out with AEW, he wants to go out the way they came in, as the Elite. Matt is wondering where Hangman Page even is, and Page does saunter out, holding a drink, of course. Matt says that he knows they cannot repair what's been broken in a day or even in a week, but asks them to stand with them, and Hangman raises his glass and walks to the back. And Kenny says that it's a weird feeling out there with nobody. It's hard to feel everyone's energy, but he knows they're out there watching. So he says, hit the lights and the pyro and start the show. And they do indeed start the show. What did you think of the opening promo here?
I loved it. I thought it was very inspiring and almost like Cody showing that he's the true company man that he is, that AEW is going to continue on as long as they can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the announcers run down the card. It's Excalibur, Jim Ross, and Taz. Then we get a Death Triangle personality video, essentially kind of running down the origins of the group. And then we get Tony Schiavone. He's at ringside with MJF, who is also at ringside, and says that he doesn't have to work tonight. He's rich. He says, like, you know, let the mid-carders get a little bit of TV time. You know, they can go kill themselves out there. And he and Sean Spears are going to take bets on who's going to win. So AEW has taken a smattering of heels and a smattering of baby faces and put them on either side of the ring to act as a crowd. But also, as we would find out later on, they kind of also use it like as an excuse to say the wrestlers are also scouting potential future opponents and stuff to kind of give a weird like loophole as to why they would be out here watching the matches. But as we'll discuss later, I think it ended up being a pretty big help to everything, all things considered. Opening match is the Best Friends against the Lucha Brothers. And we get some early back and forth, but the Friends get the better of it. Pentagon in, and they he and Phoenix double team up on Trent. Orange Cassidy is on commentary, but asleep, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
Taz loves Orange Cassidy. Like, he is constantly cracking up with Orange Cassidy. These guys kill each other with dives on the outside. They are nuts. They're like nobody there. It is weird to see dives with no reaction of any kind. Picture in picture break. The first thing I noted here is during the break, I felt like they've done an okay job of making more noise than at the Performance Center shows. But I'll talk about that in a little bit. Or we'll talk about it a little bit more later on in the show. Back from the break, and the Lucha Brothers are still working over Trent. He goes for the Pentagon Driver, but it is countered. Trent hits the Tornado DDT, tagged to Chuck Taylor. They hit the Double Team Lawn Dart Cutter on Phoenix. And instead of a hug, they do the elbow bump, because social distancing. I mean, I think it's kind of a joke. I know I saw some people who I think took that a little too seriously. Like, they're wrestling. There's no social distancing. Like, they're making physical contact with one another. And I'm like, I know, it was just a joke. Normally they hug, but, you know, it was a joke. Their Best Friends are kind of a comedy team. That was the whole point. They weren't saying we should be social distancing, because if they were, they wouldn't be wrestling at all. It was just a joke based off of a thing that they do, everybody. So they tried to do the Lucha Brothers tease the Spike Fear Factor, but this wakes up Orange Cassidy because they tease doing it on the ramp. And the referee, I think Chuck Taylor distracts the referee as Orange Cassidy just hands in pockets, dives off the stage onto the Lucha Brothers, tosses them back into the ring, stuff pile driver on Pentagon, gets a two count. Strong Zero gets cut off, and the Lucha Brothers hit the Spike Fear Factor for the win. What did you think of the opener, Nick?
Yeah, I thought it was an awesome match, but before I get into my thought of the match, I just want to say I think Brandy did a great job doing the announcements this week.
Her lower third graphic was awesome. It said, swore she would never announce again.
Yes.
Or something.
That was great. And I'll tell you, I do like Justin Roberts, but I might enjoy her more. I don't know. I thought she did really good.
Eden Styles back in the saddle again.
Oh, yeah. I think MJF heckling the wrestlers really made this match for me.
Oh, he helped make the whole show, yes.
Oh, my God. I know he was, like, cheering for, I think it was Phoenix at one point, going, yeah, let's go, mask guy.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's like, El Tago! He's trying to, like, get them to tag out. Yeah.
But I think this was probably the best match on the show, kind of blowing their load big early on. Mm-hmm. I gave it 3.5 stars. I just thought it was some fantastic tag team wrestling.
I had to fight through these matches. Like, these were better than the... Because I watched that SmackDown because I just had to see. I had to see what it was like. And we'll talk a bit more about it a little later, but part of the reason why AEW did a better job than WWE is the style of match. I know these guys worked hard. I gave them the benefit of the doubt because there was no crowd. It's so tough when there's no crowd. People were making noise, but it was weird because it was not exactly, you know what I mean? They did the best they could with the circumstances. I gave it a 3, which I don't think I ended up giving anything above a 3 on this show, but I gave them 3 stars. Grapple gave them 3.37. So a little bit closer to you than they were to me on that one. But yeah, I liked it. I thought it was good. Post-match, Tony Schiavone with the best friends. Chuck Taylor, I can't remember what he called the Lucha Brothers. Doofuses or something. He's like, he claims Trent was kicked in the dick. His actual words. Something he would later brag about to Johnny Gargano on Twitter. I don't know if you saw that, but...
did he brag about getting to say dick on TV?
Well, yeah, during the Gargano Ciampa mini documentary they showed, part of the footage they showed was during their initial tryout, and at the gym working out in the PC was one Chuck Taylor. And somebody was like, "Oh man, Chuck Taylor was on both shows tonight." And he tweeted at Gargano. He's like, "Hey, remember that?" And he's like, "Also, I said the word dick tonight on AEW." Like, he went out of his way to... He's slowly building up to saying shit. And he challenges them to a street fight. And Trent says, a legit street fight in a real street. And he's like, or a parking lot. So, that was good stuff.
It was.
4-way match. Penelope Ford versus Riho versus Chris Statlander versus Hikaru Shida. And Penelope and Riho go right after one another, stemming from Penelope defeating Riho in that singles match, dumps Riho to the outside. Statlander and Shida kill Kip Sabian with some forearms. Riho then with a big dive from the top rope all the way to the floor on all of them. After Penelope Ford misses a big hurricane run off the top rope. This did not look good, Nick.
No, it didn't.
And she may have gotten herself hurt. I was referring to it at the time as the Hurricorona, just because of how unfortunate that the timing was on that Hurricorona. So yeah, she misses that Hurricorona, and Riho does hit one, and I believe Shida hits a dropkick. All four get back into the ring and are battling with one another. Penelope Ford makes up for it, though, by hitting a springboard poison rana on Statlander. That looked awesome. Shida hit the Falcon Arrow for a 2. Penelope kicked out, so Shida got up, hit the running knee, and then got the 3. So Shida rebuilding herself at the top of the contenders rankings after losing that tag match to Nyla Rose. What did you think of the 4-way?
You know what I really loved about the 4-way was actually Kip Sabian's involvement, like pulling wrestlers out of the ring. Like, we're so used to seeing the woman doing this kind of thing. It was just kind of cool to see, you know, him in there helping her for a change. I think besides the obvious botches, Penelope Ford shows that she's got some great promise in there. Mm-hmm. And I think most of what Riho, Statlander, and Shida did was excellent. I like this match a lot. Yep. I ended up giving it 3 stars. Besides Penelope looking a little lost at times, I think it was still a really solid match.
Mm-hmm. I liked it too. I think they worked really hard. The unfortunate botch hurt a little bit. And then, of course, you've also got to take away points because of the lack of sound. I've said this before. I'll say it again. The people at ringside absolutely helped. It's not enough to like bring it up to what I would think normally is, but it was so much better than SmackDown. And we'll talk about that in just a second because of a couple notes down from here. I actually took time to jot down a couple of notes about how I felt the show was going after a couple matches. I went 2 3/4, but I liked it. Grapple went 2.94. So not too bad.
And we're almost on the same level here, me and Grapple.
Indeed. Tony Schiavone is at ringside with Colt Cabana, who puts over Penelope Ford, but says, you know what, Kip Sabian feels like he's holding her back. And Kip Sabian's still nursing Penelope Ford over on the floor, and he takes umbrage with this. He comes over, gets in Colt Cabana's face, but Colt punks him out, essentially. And he's like, you know, I'm a wrestler here, too, right? Like, I'm not just somebody. Like, I also wrestle.
Dude, that popped me so hard. That made me laugh so hard.
Yes, like, he got in his face like he's a fan or something, and Colt, like, just smacked him. He's like, you know, I wrestle here, too, right?
He was kind of just, like, dismissive, too. Like, get out of here.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was at this point that I noted that the SmackDown show, in the performance... So here are the things that set it apart. Here's what I think made this a much better show. The Performance Center is a much smaller space. Daly's place is much larger, which you'd think would be worse. But it's also outdoors, and the cavernous feel helped make it not... It helps with some of the other things I'm about to point out. The WWE production is like down to, like, they've got it down to a science, and that building is built for, it's actually set up for production because they film so much stuff there. Everything feels so sanitized in that building. That's the problem, part of the problem. The difference here is that I saw somebody make this note on Twitter and I thought it was perfect. So I jotted down a note on it. He said, this feels more like a pickup game of basketball where they weren't scheduled to have a show, but the guys were all hanging out and they're like, hey, for fun, let's have a show. And that's what it felt like with the guys at ringside, and the atmosphere made it feel a bit more like a pickup basketball game than say, whatever WWE was doing. And on top of that, AEW filmed the ramp. Their hard camera was opposite the ramp. So the ramp and the entrance and the video screens filled up the whole screen behind the ring, which for some reason helps. It helps with the visual. Like in the Performance Center, they have the hard cam where the hard cam is on every show. So you see a bunch of empty seats. It's dead. It's dead silence in a small space with empty seats, and everything is so cramped and confined and so slickly produced that it feels weird and alien. Like, this show felt weird. It definitely was weird, but I could watch it. It was definitely weird and different, but it was watchable. The WWE thing was very hard to watch. This was somehow more watch. And some of it is also the match style as well. These guys are allowed to go out there and do whatever they want. And quite frankly, a lot of these guys worked way too hard considering there were no fans. I know they were working for the fans watching, but whew, these guys were just working super hard. So we get a video of Tony Schiavone outside earlier in the day with Jon Moxley. Mox says that he is not medically cleared to wrestle, which means he's on the do not enter list. Says he's never medically cleared to wrestle, but they don't want him punching cops or anything like that. So he's just going to head out and blow off some steam. He wouldn't miss blood and guts for anything in the world, though. And he gets in that Ford GT and peels out of that driveway.
Of that commitment to storytelling. They still got the car involved.
Still got that car. Butcher and the Blade versus Jurassic Express. This is where MJF shined, because, of course, the Butcher and the Blade are his guys. So he's, like, giving the Butcher money, or the Blade, I think. But at some point, he also yells to Jungle Boy. He's like, hey, Tarzan, I've got 200 on ya. Because he and Spears are still betting at ringside. And they'll periodically cut over to MJF and Spears, and they've got, like, wine, and they've both got watts of money. And they're, like, on their phones placing bets. They were tremendous.
I think Sean Spears at one point was like, I got 300 on you, dinosaur.
Yeah. Jungle Boy starts strong but gets cut off. Luchasaurus gets in. Big double team flatliner for a two. Butcher and Blade catch a Jungle Boy Pescado, toss him into the guard railing. They work him over for a while, heading into a picture-in-picture break. Back from the break, he's still getting worked over, but eventually gets the hot tag to Luchasaurus, runs wild. Fossilizer for a two, although Excalibur, I think, called it something else. Like the Extinction Event or something? Maybe they're workshopping that name. Butcher and Blade with like a double team sidewinder for a two. MJF gets up and he yells full death, which I guess is the name of their finisher. He wants them to hit it. It gets broken up, and the Jurassic Express hit the Tombstone Cutter for the win. What did you think of the tag match here, Nick?
This one didn't get me as well as some of the other matches. I wasn't as into this match. It was kind of the least impressive thing on the show to me. I do think it was great because of MJF. That kept the entertainment. And I actually noticed all the baby faces at ringside were singing Tarzan Boy, which is...
Is that what they were singing? What is that from?
Yeah, that's... I forget what movie it's in, but I know that it was Jungle Boy's theme song on the indies, which is really cool.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, they were going,
oh, I heard them singing, but I'm like, what are they doing? That's funny.
For this one, I only gave it 2.5 stars. It just, it did not wow me. It was, I don't know how to describe it really, but it wasn't doing it for me.
I think for me in this one, MJF brought it up a notch. I went 2.75. Okay. I liked it. I thought they did their job. 2.69 from Grapple. So I liked it a little bit more than the good people over on the Grapple app.
Okay.
All right, let's get into some story, because we get a lot of story before our main event here. So up next, Uno and Stu Grayson come out. Uno grabs the microphone, says that the Exalted One is near, says that Evil Uno never lies, he never breaks a promise. He's going on and on and on. Christopher Daniels is finally like, hold on, stop it. Stop talking, stop lying. Says that Uno helps nobody. He hasn't helped John Silver, hasn't helped Alex Reynolds, hasn't helped anybody but himself and Stu. There is no Exalted One. This is all for their benefit and for nobody else's. And then a video plays, and a hooded figure with a voice distortion is talking to Christopher Daniels. But as he's talking, the distortion starts to fade away, and a normal voice is heard, and a hood is removed to reveal Big Trucker Brody Lee.
Yeah.
Says that Christopher Daniels has been running his mouth. He has no idea what he's getting himself into. Christopher Daniels isn't the first old, out-of-touch man who doesn't believe in him. So, suck it, Vince. And then the video cuts out, and when they come back, the camera pans around Christopher Daniels, and now Brody Lee has somehow materialized into the ring, along with the rest of Dark Order, and they wipe out CD and Kaz. And Brody kind of does this, like, he hits his, like, discus lariat, but he sort of sets him up with, like, Sister Abigail position, which I thought was, like, an interesting homage to Bray. Like, I think people were like, was that a shot? And I'm like, no, I think they're, like, really close, actually, or they're good friends or something. So he kind of, like, he did, like, the Dirty Dancing, dipped him, and then spun him out, and then did the discus lariat, which, by the way, looked awesome. He killed this man with his lariat. And I thought, what did you think of this? I thought Brody Lee's promo was very good. They never let this guy talk in WWE, like, ever. He cut a good promo.
One of the heavier suggested names that was going to be the Exalted One, like a lot of people thought he had the potential to be. And I agree with you. I've never heard him really talk before other than the yeah. That's the most you get out of him.
Mm-hmm.
So I was impressed with his skills. I thought the whole segment was great. Even the way they just framed the camera on Evil Uno's face the whole time.
Yeah.
It brought like an air of seriousness to this until Daniels broke it up.
Yeah.
There were two things that are just minor gripes that annoyed me.
Okay.
I could see Brody walking onto the stage right before they cut to the video. It was very quick, but I saw him with his little jacket on.
Oh, shit. Did you? I'm going to go back and watch that.
Yeah, I noticed that right beforehand, and that was like just kind of weird just because he was in the ring afterwards, but that's a very minor gripe.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the other thing I thought of. That's just been clouding my mind because I could not think of it. So I guess I just have one gripe for the time being. Never mind.
That makes it even funnier if you could see him coming out for like a split second before they cut to the video. Because then when they cut back and Daniels is in the ring and he turns around, he's like, what? Like, he didn't see him. But obviously, if you saw him coming out before the video, everyone would have seen him coming out.
For sure.
That does make it funny.
I remember my second thought. Brody just kind of walks to the back and leaves the rest of the Dark Order in the ring. I just thought that was kind of awkward.
They're his minions. You know, whatever. I sort of like
I guess they're the followers.
And I do really like the cult-like nature of it, because the Dark Order, of course, is all in dark colors. And Brody Lee is, like, bathed in white. I mean, his gear is dark, but, like, the jacket he wears is like, very, very bright white. To kind of, like, separate him from the followers. I thought this was very good. I'm glad it wasn't Matt Hardy. I know a lot of people... Like, I think Matt Hardy would have been good. Like, he could have come up with some sort of evil, broken Matt. But I'm glad they didn't do that, because Matt would have just been beloved and cheered, and we kind of want this group to be hated. And I think Brody Lee is a good choice, honestly. And people are going to be surprised at how awesome he is. Okay, Nick, I don't know if you can help me out here or not. I have Tony Schiavone at ringside with Jake the Snake Roberts and Lance Archer. Okay? But here's the problem. Jake cut a great promo, but I have a problem with Jake the Snake Roberts. His promos are, to me, captivating. Like, I hang on every word this guy says. I don't have notes for what he said. Like, this show, I was watching this live and taking notes, so my notes read, Tony with Jake and Archer cuts a great promo. Damn, Jake is captivating. Did you take down anything that he specifically said? I know he was talking about talking to Cody and that stuff, but...
I'm kind of in the same boat. I was just paying attention the whole time. The most I got out of it was that they were calling Cody out and basically challenging him, and he brought up him being Caesar again, and those are the main points I can get.
Everything he says so well, though. I don't know. It's crazy. So they cut to this video, and Jim Ross is like, we're going to learn more about Lance Archer. And I love what we learned about Lance Archer is that he kills people. So I wrote here, video of Lance Archer killing dudes in a backyard federation. And it was pretty damn great.
I wrote promo of Lance Archer working the Gathering of the Juggalos, because that's what it seemed like to me.
There was one dude who had his face painted. So they're like in the woods somewhere, and there's some like crappy wrestling ring set up. And all of these freaks are, like, surrounding it, like, guys of all shapes and sizes. Some in shape, some out of shape, some huge, some small. And they're all, like, circled around it, like, in a frenzy, like it's Mad Max or some shit. And in comes Lance Archer and Jake the Snake Roberts, and Jake just sits down in, like, a lawn chair. And Lance just gets in this ring, and he's like, everybody dies. And there's some, like, little person who's like, let the games begin, essentially. And all these dudes come in. They even have, like, a girl holding, like, round cards and stuff. And these dudes come in, and Lance Archer just kills all of them one by one. And they do these great slow-mo shots that are just awesome looking. This is just filmed so well. And, like, Jake Roberts is just, like, the camera's, like, over his shoulder as he's just, like, watching this guy destroy all these people. They finish with this shot, essentially, of, like, Archer standing in the ring, and it's, like, a shot from above, like, from a drone or something, and bodies are just strewn all over. And then he gets out, and Jake Roberts, it's all in slow motion, and Jake Roberts is just slowly clapping as Lance Archer comes to him. And then one guy remains, he's like, hey, asshole, I'll take you on. And Lance Archer, like, choke slams him on the hood of a car, and then gives him, like, the claw, and then slams his head into the car repeatedly in the claw. This was awesome.
It was. I'm scared
of this man.
I think it's the most story that Lance Archer's ever had, and it was really impressive. I noticed, I believe Fred Yehi was one of the wrestlers in the backyard. I noticed him from Evolve.
I know Fred Yehi. Yeah, I know of him. I didn't notice him in there, but yeah.
It may have been him. It may have not been. But like, I did a quick, you know, double take. I'm like, is that Fred Yehi?
I love that the character is Jake Roberts found a murderer and has trained him to wrestle, essentially, to murder people or whatever the character is. His character is that he kills people.
Jake's killing days are over. He just talks for the killers now.
Yes. I thought this ruled.
That was awesome.
In a fairly question, so they announced some of the stuff for, here's the big thing, the wording on this. They announced matches for the next episode of Dynamite. They did not say next week. They just said the next episode. They announced the Luchasaurus versus Wardlow in a lumberjack match, which seems questionable. You don't want to have too many people around ringside, but I don't know. You could question whether or not they should have even done this show, but they did this show, so we're watching it and reviewing it. So you could make the argument that they shouldn't do anything right now just to be safe, but they did this show, and I think the risk, obviously there's a risk in doing it, but I think the risk was fairly low, all things considered, and they obviously had physicians on hand, and they were getting checkups. So unless one of them has it and is asymptomatic, everybody who wrestled on this show was free and clear to do so. So I'm sure they're taking every precaution, but it does seem weird that they're going to do a lumberjack match. They announced the parking lot brawl between the best friends and the Lucha Brothers. And apparently Blood and Guts is still going to go forward. The Elite is now down a man as Nick Jackson is indefinitely out. I kind of hope they find a way to just postpone this. Like, I don't think you want to do a double cage, double ring match with no audience. Even if you've got some wrestlers around ringside, I don't think you want to do that. Plus, if you're going to do a match that's like really bloody and stuff, I don't think anybody should go through that with nobody in attendance. No. I feel like they've got to find a way to push it off. I know they've got their storylines written out, but they've got to find some way to do it. I don't know how well it would turn out. I think this show went very well, but I don't know how well something like that would go without an audience. Main event time, the Inner Circle versus the Elite for the advantage in the Blood and Guts match. Inner Circle was Santana, Ortiz, and Jake Hager against the mismatched Elite team of Matt Jackson, Hangman Page, and Cody. And when Hangman Page came out, his lower chyron said, "Social distancing since November." I laughed pretty good at that. That was a good one. Jericho comes out to do commentary, at which point, since there is no crowd to sing his song, Sammy Guevara and MJF, literally with a microphone, are singing along with Chris Jericho's theme song. And Sammy Guevara not doing so hot. Afterwards, I don't know if you caught this little bit. Sammy Guevara and MJF. And Sammy Guevara says something along the lines of like, "Well, I know you were in choir." And MJF is like, "Yeah, we went to States." He's like, he's like trying to show him how to like sing from like his diaphragm or something. This was awesome. Jericho, I wrote here, Jericho, incredible on commentary, even before the match begins. Like he's calling Hangman Page, hand wash Page. I can't remember some other stuff he said. He was just hilarious. Oh, he said
Arn Anderson was out with his Waffle House menu.
Waffle House menu, which popped JR. He's like, "I popped you, JR." He popped Taz, too, and he's like, "Oh, you'll get in trouble." He's like, "I popped you, too." Jericho is incredible on commentary. This last match actually helped a lot because there was so much noise. You had the noise from the six men in the match. You had Kenny Omega at ringside. You had the commentary team, and you had the heels and baby faces behind the guardrails. Like, there was so much noise in this match, it almost made up for the fact that there was no crowd. Santana jumps Cody from behind. Eventually, Cody takes control. The Elite working well as a team early. Hangman tags himself in, though, hits a pump handle suplex for a two. Cody gets back in, but gets cut off by Jake Hager. They basically work him over until the commercial break. They're back from the break, and Cody is still being worked over. And then I wrote, "For a long time." Boy, do they work him over. Cody finally creates some space, goes for the tag, but Santana knocks Hangman and Matt off the apron. And we go to another picture-in-picture break. Back from the second break, and finally Cody tags in Hangman Page. He's a house of fire. Sliding lariat for a two. Cody tosses Ortiz over the guardrail onto MJF. Matt hits the Northern Lights Express on Santana, tries it on Hager. Hangman comes in to help Matt Jackson, and they suplex Jake Hager. And Matt's like, you know what? This is feeling good. Let's try for the Indie Taker. But Hangman gets cut off. Santana rolls up Matt for the win. What did you think of the main event before we talk about the post-match?
I think the ending was really cool, that little bit of storytelling. Otherwise, I didn't feel like this was necessarily the best effort of these two groups. I think it may have been one of the weaker matches they've had. Mm-hmm. Didn't blow me away too much. Jericho was definitely the highlight of everything, just throwing his little jabs at everyone.
It was tremendous. The whole match.
Oh, my God. I think when they had Cody up in the... in the suplex position, he said that they were carrying him like a little baby. And I liked some of the stuff that was going on there, like Cody getting kind of a free shot in an MJF and then Wardlow trying to choke him out.
Yeah. The stuff with Matt and Hangman, like, working together a little bit, like, putting their differences aside, like, I love that, but it still failed, and they still failed, though.
Oh, yeah. It gives you a little bit of hope only for them to lose, but I think anyone watching this show knew that the Elite were going to lose this match.
Yeah.
I ended up giving it 2¾ stars, which feels weird to give a match with, you know, Elite members in it, but it didn't really catch me on fire. I wasn't crazy about this one.
Yeah, I liked it, too. I gave it 3. So we're not too far off. Grapple gave it a 3.29. I like that they continued to tell the stories. They really didn't have to. Like, the SmackDown show didn't really feel like there was much in the way of storytelling going on with, you know, the promos. There were actually good promos on SmackDown and Raw, but that was it. Like, there was nothing in the matches. The matches were like, no wonder why Vince didn't like them. They were boring matches in front of nobody. Yep. Like, these were fun matches in front of nobody. But they were fun, and they were still telling a story that you could follow along with. And with enough people there making noise, it wasn't that bad. So I gave it a 3, which is weird, because normally I think a match like this probably would have done better. But, you know, there's a lot of problems, obviously. Post-match, Jericho grabs the microphone, talks about why they're the best ever. They're the Inner Circle. They've never had a crossword with one another. They've never accidentally hit one another with their own finishers. He decrees that it does not matter what happens in the world tomorrow or the day after. He decrees henceforth that there are to never be any more fans at AEW shows ever. He doesn't want people cheering for the Elite or Kenny Omega, any of these people. No more fans ever. He was awesome.
I was going to say, at the start of the match, I believe he said, it's been a long time since I've been in front of a crowd this small or something like that. It's been like 30-something years since I wrestled in front of nobody.
He gloats about them having the man advantage, and in fact, they have the double advantage. They have the man advantage, and they have the numbers advantage. There's no crack in their armor. All they do is win. And then, Nick, we hear a very weird buzzing sound. An incredibly loud, annoying buzzing sound. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, it was weirdly annoying. Like, did they screw up the audio, like, right at the end of this show? But no. We then get a camera shot of a drone flying in. It is Vanguard. I wrote here, Vanguard fucking One flies in.
Damn right.
I was so excited for this stupid plastic cheap $100 drone or whatever it is flying in. And Jericho's looking at, they're all looking at this like, what the shit is this? And Matt gets on the microphone and says that, you know, Jericho's right. They've been having a tough time lately. They're having a hard time pulling it together. But he is wrong about one thing. They are not down a man. He made a call. He put in a call, called in a favor from an old friend who owed him. And as Vanguard One lands, the camera pans over across Daly's place. And there in the stands is broken Matt Hardy. And yes. Chris Jericho is stunned. Matt Hardy is from a wide distance deleting him, sending out shockwaves of deletion from the stands. That was how they ended the show. What did you think of the closing portion of Dynamite here?
I had this spoiled for me beforehand because I watched it today while I was working.
Yep.
And it still gave me chills, man. Like, it was
great.
It was amazing. You know, you could argue that Matt deleted the whole crowd.
Yes. I just like to think that he's sending a shockwave of deletion towards the Inner Circle. Because what else could he be doing from that far away? Like, you could hear him because it's so silent. If you had headphones on, you hear a very distant delete, delete, delete as he's saying it, but it's like way off in the distance and very, very tiny. But he's, of course, shouting it from the stands, but they're far away, so the microphones didn't pick it up very well. But it was surreal and kind of incredible.
Oh, man, it was fantastic. This is going to be one of those moments that people remember. And could you imagine what it would have been like if he showed up, you know, with a crowd around him?
Unbelievable. Yeah. Him, Brody Lee as well, because this show would have been in Rochester, which is his hometown. So he would have also received a giant, you know, it's shitty that things happened the way they did and it doesn't work out like that. But, oh, man, you know what? I think as far as like doing a show under these types of circumstances, I think AEW did about as good as a show as you can do under these circumstances. Like as much as you can hit a home run in this type of situation, I think they did. It's tough, but I walked away from that show. It was weird. It was different, but I walked away feeling like I watched something special instead of just watching something that was boring or dull or just uninteresting. Like, this show is anything but dull and uninteresting. It was weird for sure, but I felt like I watched something special and important, which, holy cow, so much kudos to those guys for managing to put on a show like that with no audience in the building. Is,
oh my God,
pretty incredible.
It is a memorable show. It's one that people are going to remember forever, and they still didn't have a crowd. That's a testament to how good AEW is.
Now, the real question is, if they keep doing shows like this for a while with no crowd, are they going to be able to hold up to this? and will it last? Or is this a novelty, and will the novelty quickly wear off without an audience? That'll remain to be seen, but I'm sure they'll have to put their creative juices into overdrive to get this all figured out. But whew, crazy. A fun episode. We have no idea for sure if there is going to be an episode next week. They just said on the next Dynamite. So I guess that's what we're going to go with. I don't even know if they officially announced Blood and Guts for the next Dynamite, but maybe they did. I presume that's what all of this was for. So, I guess that's what we'll wrap it up with. That's it for the show for this week. Head on over to cinemageekly.com to check out the archives of the show. And of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. Just search for The Elitists. Hit subscribe, and that way you can hear us come back next time and talk about the next episode of Dynamite on TNT, featuring the Inner Circle versus the Elite and the Delete in the Blood and Guts match.
Alt Elite Wrestling.